This is an interview with Dr. Vecchia for the Youngstown State Oral History Program on 8th May 1986 at Youngstown State University. Okay. Now, this is our second interview here, so I'd like to know, pertaining to the foreign policy of Mussolini, as best as you can remember, being in the military, did fascism and Nazism operate with the same methods according to the foreign policy?
Yeah, in retrospect, they pursued a very aggressive type of policy. I suppose from my personal shall we say, interpretation of the events in retrospect, not at the time that these things happened, both Italy and Germany had been involved in World War I. Both of them had come out somehow short of their goals. Germany, because they were defeated and they lost most of the colonies. Italy, because it was on the winning side, had perhaps not received the expected rewards, with the exception of the lower portion of the northeast border with Austria, when Italy regained the Trentino, or the Tyrone area, where Trieste is located and Trento is located. So that did not represent in a certain way a just reward for the victory on the Italian side. And Hitler on the other side, having been defeated, when I say Hitler, I mean Germany, having been defeated, they had perhaps a chip on their shoulder. They wanted to regain some of the lost prestige and some of the lost colonies in Africa. So they pursued what I believe was a very aggressive form of course, independently to begin with. It is not a mystery, as a matter of fact, that when Hitler tried to annex Austria during the early 30s, Mussolini objected to that, and Hitler could not gain some sort of territorial accomplishment right away. He had to wait for the right opportunity, and the opportunity presented itself very shortly afterwards. As a matter of fact, because both of them proclaimed, Mussolini and Hitler proclaimed being anti-communist, both philosophies professed to be against communism. They wasted no time in helping Franco in his civil war, during the civil war in Spain, which was nothing else but a civil turmoil and civil war between Franco's forces and the communist forces on the other side. So both Hitler and Mussolini give plenty of help to Franco. I do remember personally, and with a certain, I don't want to say very clearly, but clear enough, the participation in Spain by the so-called militi, which was nothing else than the voluntary militia that Mussolini had established. It was based on voluntary participation, of course. It was not compulsion of going, but the monetary rewards were appealing, so several, I don't want to say, I don't recall exactly how many people from my hometown in particular, but I remember a few of them that participated on the side of Franco's forces in the war in Spain. As a matter of fact, there is a even today there is a street named after the only man from my hometown who fell in Spain, and he was awarded the second highest decoration among all things. Then, right after the participation in the Spanish Civil War, they call it Civil War, but there was plenty of outside interference, like Italians and Germans helping out Franklin. It's called civil, it's not limited to the fraternal fighting or among people of the same nation. But here I have the continuation of the expansion, the aggressive policy set out, of course, that Mussolini set out for Italy, was the Ethiopian War, 1935-36. And that was the determining point, in my opinion, that caused Mussolini and Hitler to get closer and closer until later on in 1938, if I'm not mistaken, they formed the so-called Patto d'Acciaio, the Steel Pact. I think it was 1938, I'm not sure about it, maybe 38, maybe not 38, I don't know about it. So the Ethiopian War was nothing else than some sort of revindication of Italy's rights to a colonial empire, if you want to call it that. Italy already controlled Libya, as we know it today, Tripolitania, and another area nearby, the Cyrenaica. All along the northern border of Africa and the Mediterranean. As a matter of fact, it was called in history books in Italy called Quarta Sponda, is the fourth shore of Italy. You know, the third three shores are the sides of Italy close to the Mediterranean Sea, east, south, and west. And then the fourth shore was the African colonies, North Africa. Of course, there was nothing else than the revival of rule in Mussolini's dream, that the control of the Mediterranean. So the Ethiopian War was a very costly one, as far as I can remember. Some of the things that happened, the necessity of Italy depending, as usual, on other countries for anything that was needed, from providing grain and wheat and anything, from prime things that are needed for industries. Everything had to be imported, so it was easy to hit Italy hard with economic sanctions, which were declared by the countries that belonged to the Society of Nations in Geneva. That was 1935. And of course, some help had to come from somewhere. And there was no big about it. Hitler did provide some assistance for the Italians, so Mussolini had a made to order the situation to join in, perhaps not philosophically, but at least politically, it was made out toward the situation. So when the in 1936, just about this time of year, in May, as I remember, we left our old classroom to go out and celebrate on the streets when the war came to an end in Ethiopia. That, I think it was May the 9th, if I recall. And that was the end of the war, and about a few months later, two, three months later, the sanctions were lifted. But the friendship between the two leaders had been established. Had been somehow brought up, created in Spain, and welded with the Ethiopian help. Not great help, but you know, the only nation and the only help, Mussolini. And of course, later on, in order to create a better way to control the Mediterranean, There was, I think it was 1938, at the same time that Mussolini had signed the Patto d'Acciaio, or still pact with Hitler. The country across in the Balkans, across from Italy, within the Adriatic border, Albania became integral part of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can more or less form a chain of controlling point throughout the Mediterranean. And on the other hand, that was perhaps a logical expansion along the Adriatic coast, because there were a number of islands that at one time were closer to the Yugoslav territory than Italy. They were part of the Italian territory. As a matter of fact, southeast of Trieste, right along the Adriatic coast of Yugoslavia, there's a number of islands that belong to Italy, the south, and people today still talk Italian. I have met people in this area, Cleveland, who, being even though they were born and raised in Yugoslavia, they spoke fluent Italian.
Oh,
and the exposure to the Italian influence. So you have the in very quick succession, you have the participation in the Spanish War, Ethiopic War against Abyssinia, Ethiopia or Abyssinia, same thing, yeah. And the takeover of Albania, and then preparation for the last conflict, World War II. When Hitler took over Austria, there was no longer objection on Mussolini's part,
mm-hmm.
on the Italian's part. So Hitler started having his own free way and assistance from Mussolini. That was the preparation for the Munich meeting with the representative of France and England, and then, of course, big problems in the World War II situation, in which I did participate. I don't know, beyond the mention of these specific war events, what else could be engaged into by anybody between 1925, when he really established, according to history books, established the control by the fascist party of in the beginning of the dictatorship in 1939-40, 15 years, three wars, I think sufficient for a country that you have enough people to send to the front line, really. Yes, there were enough people around in Italy, but at that time the population of Italy were 40 million people. But 40 million people, I don't know what you can do when you don't have all what you need to produce arms. Like Germany could do, they had the, steel factories that they produce armament. Go ahead with some questions, because I don't know what else to add to that.
You mentioned in your discourse the difference between Mussolini and Hitler's philosophy and politics.
No, I had at the beginning in Spain, they pursued the same type of policy. Yeah, I can see that in retrospect, I can see these things. Yeah.
Right.
I think when during our first interview, I did point out some of the things. If you do know, are not aware of the existence of certain things, it's very hard when you have not fed information to know what goes on. So we knew that here's Mussolini doing great things for the country, so you grow up more or less accepting some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And where is the desire to change them if you don't know of any better? Mm-hmm. Of any better perspective. What difference will it make to an individual, let's put it this way, what does election mean to you if you do not even know that the government representative can be elected? You know that you can choose them? Well, sure, you may have ideas, but when those ideas are not shared by too many people, who are you going to share with? You do not even know. For example, you do not even know there were people in political exile out there. The history books that we went through on our comparable type of books, let's say civilization books, whatever, social studies, it did not contain any reference to people having left Italy for political reasons. Let me talk of myself. For example, the episode of the Matteotti assassination, we did not even know who Matteotti was.
Really?
Of course not. Just later on you find out when Mussolini is gone that these things had happened before, or the elimination of election. Sure, I remember my grandfather, my grandfathers, talking about electing certain people or not, but I'm talking about perhaps about 80, 90 years ago. I don't remember my father ever went to vote or anything like that. Or my mother by the same token. But my grandparents, they went to express their preference for a certain candidate. And I don't know how many candidates might have been around there at the time. Because as far as my knowledge goes from textbooks, that the senators who existed before Mussolini, they were selected by the king. He's like the senator to represent what we know today, we make up the Italian peninsula, the Italian country, the regions. They were selected by the king, so they were there in a certain way to defend certain ideals, certain philosophies.
When you look back, and notice it in your retrospective, how did you view the different philosophies of Hitler and Mussolini now?
Yeah, I think I can detect some differences. Even though they, as a common goal, they wanted the elimination of the communists, I honestly believe that they were pursuing that course for different purposes. That's my impression, for different purposes. I suppose that Mussolini was really interested in giving some prestige to Italy, which had been missing, some power, which had been missing, some territorial expansion, not so much to give prestige and glory, but to create perhaps, and that was a slogan, I don't know, I may even accept it as being true, the Italian peninsula is too small for the type of population that lives in it. Now, when you don't have enough to provide for your people, you had to look for expansion somewhere else. It did work for expansion in Africa because there was already some territory that belonged to Italy, some colonies. And it looked toward Ethiopia because there was another Italian colony right next to it, Eritrea. And another one, or further south, Somaliland. That one portion of Somaliland in Eritrea, they were part of Italian colonies. They were Italian colonies. and perhaps the inward march was natural after the Ethiopia. Maybe he expected to find there what he didn't find. Maybe gold,
mm-hmm.
or maybe coffee. There is some coffee producers, if I'm not mistaken. But he went money in order to develop not just the colonies that existed before Ethiopia, but Ethiopia itself. He built schools. He had schools built there. He didn't build them personally, of course. He had schools built there. He had churches built there. He had hospitals built there. He had roads built there. That was a civilization progress in order to have some Italian moving there.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, in Italy today, you still find some Africans from the former colonies of Italy that had come there to study, and they speak full Italian. They have Italian in their schools.
Mm-hmm.
And they were accepted in Italian universities for to further their studies without any problems, but they were proficient in Italian. Just they were almost their natural native language. So this is what perhaps Mussolini had in mind. By the same token, Hitler had in mind territorial expansion, but I don't think he would ever limited his expansion to the European goals. He would have gone beyond that. Napoleon had in mind to conquer Russia. I think Hitler was not far away from that sort of ideas. And between you and me, I am not convinced that in Hitler's plans would not have ended Italy itself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I honestly think that would have been perhaps the ultimate goal, because once Mussolini had got out of the picture, he would not have hesitated 1 minute.
Sure.
To take over also the Italian peninsula. So in a way, I can see that Mussolini had that in mind. I don't think he really had in mind to conquer Europe. He would not have done it against Hitler. I don't think he had the power to do it anyhow. He would have resisted communism anywhere. At least that's what he had in mind at the beginning. But he wanted to provide some outlets for the extra Italian manpower. I'm talking about working people.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have given to him the halo of another Caesar or whatever. And by the opposite, pursuing the same line of territorial conquest, Hitler would have succeeded in establishing something different. An empire which all of the his predecessors through even Austria and the rest, the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, and he had already taken over Austria, and what we'll have stopped there, and then we went all the way down to the Balkans, and then went all the way beyond the Polish border, for him practically didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I see it. And on the other hand, it would have been only natural for Hitler to think in terms of ruling over the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
He had easier access than the Italians had.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Spain had been helped, and they had to pay their dues. I don't know how long they have lasted. It's one of those things that I see a difference there. I don't know how pronounced the difference is, because that's a second guessing.
Right.
Yeah, if you do it sport, if you don't do certain mistakes, don't commit certain mistakes, you're bound to win the game, right?
Right, it's all ifs.
It's all ifs.
Yes. Did you ever hear of do you remember when there was a concordant with the Vatican, this man made the concordant
yeah.
with the Vatican in 29?
I remember very well, because it was a national holiday. No, yeah. I think Mussolini really pursued in within Italy a sort of policy that permitted him to stay here. He also made peace with the popes, which was something that did not exist before. When the Italian peninsula, more or less, with the exception of Trieste and the Tyrolean area, had reached almost, had almost completed the unity, except the little portion. There was one area that was dear to all the Italians, Rome, which did not belong to anybody but to the popes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was only natural that the peninsula, the way it is, with the strict texture of the Italian population, having one country and not having Rome, it's just like having one body but no heart in it. So it was only natural to think of Rome as the capital of the country. Torino or Turin had been the first one, then Florence went through the annexation movement. Everything that belonged to, or was controlled by other foreign powers was under the control of Casa Savoia, ruling the family. So Rome was missing. Across the southern part of Italy, Garibaldi took care of that with the Red Shirt Expedition,
mm-hmm.
or the so-called Spedizione dei Mille, 1,000 volunteers. And of course, he had other people joining in later on during his march. He cleared up the remaining end of the Bourbon's domination there, so Italy was almost won, almost won. But Rome was missing. Mm-hmm. There was only natural to think about asking the popes to relinquish Rome, which they had no intention of doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was important for them to have it. Eventually, in 1870, some of these things are really well written, because also part of the history began to go through the history books. September 20th, 1870, which happened to be one time also a national holiday, Rome was taken by storm. Actually, there was no fighting as such, and the popes were confined to their Vatican area, you know, today. They could move around if they wanted to, but they chose not to. So
mm-hmm.
they considered themselves prisoners within Italy. And that thing lasted from 1870 all the way through 1929. And the reason I remember the date of the treaty that was signed between Italy and Vatican, called Patto Laterano, Lateran Pact, because we were given a holiday. It was February 11th, 1929 was the date. So an agreement was reached by Mussolini and the Pope, Mussolini as a representative of the Italian government. As a matter of fact, it may be a kind of strange that the Italian people addressed Mussolini as Duce, his leader, but actually he never, of course he did reject the idea, but he was always considered and calling himself head of the government, capo del governo, and he's prime minister at the moment,
right.
Fact. Yeah, but he never, Duce, but other people call him.
Right.
Yeah, very smart way to do it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't done, it was very expensive.
And the date that as I said, is February 11, 29, there was an agreement reached whereby popes could do whatever they wanted. They could get the protection of the Italian government. The Catholic religion was recognized as the official religion of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much money passed hence, whichever way, but there was an end to the kind of hostilities without firing between Italy and Vatican City.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the father. And I said, son, of these days, I remember, because you get a holiday for the new park, you don't go to school. Right. Uh-huh. That's important, right? The 4th of July,
right.
Memorial Day. So September 20 was one of them. Unfortunately, September 20 was not school day, because the school started a little later. Mm-hmm. Or in the among the holidays that we always remember is the entry of the Italian, of Italy into World War II. Yeah, we were talking about some of the days. For example, the date of May 24th was always remembered as the entry of Italy into World War I. Especially, that meant a lot for the Italians, because eventually winning against Austria would have meant the return to Italy of Trieste and Trento. Or later on, of course, there's the end of the war of 1918, that was the Armistice Day, November 11, which was celebrated by everybody, but at the end of the still his official end of Mussolini. But that had nothing to do with Mussolini. Of course, Mussolini was indirectly involved, because with his newspaper reporting, he was an active newspaper reporter. He favored the intervention of the Italian troops against the Austrians and the Germans. He did favor them. There was no question about it. See, the thing that, to backtrack a little bit, I don't have to emphasize the fact that, because everybody knows that Mussolini started as a fervent socialist adherent. He was a fervent socialist. But, and of course also a syndicalist, and he's involved in unionizing. He was a school teacher to begin with. He left Italy rather early, and he was for a while, I think in Switzerland and France. But they told him to leave the country because he was too involved in activities which these countries were not true about. And so when he came back to Italy, it was early 1900, with his newspaper reporting and his activities, he really wanted Italy to get involved. Well, he did participate in war, by the way. He was, he did not discourage with his newspaper writing the what an Italian poet, warrior, whatever, Gabriele D'Annunzio, you might have heard of. He tried to annex to Italy the city of Zara, all of the Istrian territory, what is that, right, near Trieste, and Mussolini approved of it. As a matter of fact, the takeover of this area, Istria, or Guarnaro, that was the name of the area, was completed. The Nuncio became a fervent Mussolini. Then Mussolini took rank immediately over. He formed his organization, the fascist organization, somewhere between the, was it 18, 19, something like that. And 22, they culminated with the March on Rome in 1922. So that became the, shall we say, the embryo of Mussolini direct into Roman Italian life. And if I recall correctly, then I'm pretty sure I mentioned that, he had an easy way to start with this idea of political philosophy, having deserted the socialist affiliation, because there was a turmoil over there. And when turmoil was there, the one that really had the upper hand, not all do it in the end. So we start from the beginning, we go back to the beginning.
Thank you.